listening to the Whale Scout Podcast with your host, Whitney Megabauer.
Welcome to the Whale Scout Podcast, everybody. My name is Whitney Megabauer, and today is August 8th. And today on the podcast, we will be interviewing Dawn Noren. However, the interview that I conducted with her happened a few hours previously than right now. And we have just received breaking news that J35 is still carrying her dead calf. So this is now the 16th day that she has kept that calf with her. And in the podcast, you know, Dawn and I both didn't know this information. So it makes it even more important to get out. And so that is just a little disclaimer that I'd like to add before we begin. For just a little bit of context, J35 is a southern resident killer whale, and she is a member of JPOD who was sighted off of Victoria on July 24th. And people in the whale watching fleet claimed to see J35 with a live calf, and by the time the Center for Whale Research got on scene about 30 minutes later, that calf was no longer alive. She then went on to push this calf along on her nose, her rostrum, and in her mouth for now 16 days, which is absolutely unprecedented in southern resident killer whales. And I'm actually not even sure in other species if this has been observed for this many days in a row. So it's really drawing a lot of public attention around the world for people relating to this whale and trying to understand what might be going on. So in this podcast, we'll be talking with Dawn Noren about what physiologically J35 might be feeling. We're unsure if she is eating. And so people are very concerned. At the same time that this is happening, there's another killer whale in her pod, J50, also known as Scarlet, who was the first of the baby boomers. And she, this summer, was seen looking thin, and then researchers kept an eye on her over the weeks and saw her condition deteriorating even further. So she has been observed eating fish that have been brought over to her from her podmates, from her family. However, she is still in really bad shape. So NOAA and Department of Fisheries and Oceans in Canada have decided to step in and intervene. And the plan as of August 8th at 4:45 is that they are trying to get a sample to see if there's something, an illness going on. So from the blow of a whale, and if there's some sort of illness they can treat, they're talking about using like a syringe to administer a long-acting antibiotic, or even from a dart, like a crossbow from a further distance. There's also been discussions about supplementing the diet of J50 by delivering live salmon off of a boat. These are things that, at least the supplemental feeding is something that's just never been tried before. So the world is watching these vets and biologists and managers try to figure this out. So we'll learn more with our podcast with Dawn Noren. Welcome back to the Whale Scout Podcast. We are joined now with Dawn Noren from NOAA. Hi, Dawn. How are you?
Good, thanks.
So I wanted to talk with you today about your research. What you do is kind of unique. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you do?
I have a lot of hands in different pots, but my expertise is physiology. And recently, I've been mostly focused on body condition, energetics, and contaminant transfer.
And in the news recently, there have been two big stories. The first is J35, who, as the news reports are telling us had a calf that lived maybe only about 30 minutes and then died, and then was carried around the Salish Sea for at least 10 days. So can you give us some insight on what may have happened with this calf and why this female calf died so young?
Yeah, there could be lots of reasons why. It could be just a simple birth defect, or it could be the contaminants or the mom's nutritional state. It would be great if the vets could actually get the body and do a necropsy, because they can really get more information on cause of death. It's really hard to speculate from just watching this calf being pushed around, unfortunately, because, you know, killer whales and dolphins, they lose calves when they're born. I've been working with the necropsy data from a lot of different killer whales that have been stranded on the West Coast, and, you know, there's lots of different reasons why calves have died, and some of them are just a birth defect as well. So it's hard to speculate without an actual necropsy, I think.
So there's no trend or anything that we can kind of guess that may be a problem, either toxins. I've heard from people doing drone work that J35 looks to be in decent shape. Is that correct?
Yeah, I haven't seen the pictures myself, but I trust if they think that she's in decent shape, that she is. And so if she's in decent shape, then it may not be a nutritional issue with her. It could potentially be toxins. My understanding, though, is she's had a calf before. So, you know, a second-born or a third-born calf is going to have less influx of contaminants, because, unfortunately, the first-born calves are the ones that get the large dose from the mom's milk, and also presumably a little bit more during gestation as well. So it is interesting that this is not a first-born calf, from my understanding.
Right. I believe J47 Notch is her calf.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think the chances are that the body of the deceased calf will be found?
Gosh, it's hard, because they've been going out away from the islands that people can access the animals by boat. And also with time, even though it is surrounded by cold water, the tissue is going to start deteriorating. And once, you know, the tissues start going internally, it's, you know, much more difficult for vets to really get great samples to figure out, you know, a more specific cause of death.
And for as sad as it is for this calf, a lot of people have now turned their attention to J35, to the mom. And there's a lot of speculation if, you know, while she was carrying her calf for days and days on end, if she was actually eating, or if her pod mates were helping feed her. So the question became, you know, how long can she go before she starts to be impacted from nutritional stress, from potentially not eating and being a new mom? Is this a more vulnerable time for her?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, as I was watching the footage myself, my concerns are that she is pushing this calf. And, you know, I was, you know, a couple days, I was like, okay, you know, that's been seen before in dolphins and killer whales, and eventually she'll let it go and she'll resume her behavior. But after a couple weeks, or, you know, 10 days, it definitely was starting to concern me as well, because there is some energetics cost associated with pushing something in front of you through the water. There's increased drag. She was diving more to pick up the calf when she dropped it. And so, you know, there's some kicking involved. There is some stroking and gliding on dives, but, you know, repeated dives that aren't necessarily foraging dives are not necessarily a benefit to the animal, and potentially more energetic cost. And definitely not consuming food. I mean, I'm hopeful that others in her pod might have given her some fish. Maybe they carry the baby for a bit to let her allow some fish. She probably isn't eating what she normally would be eating, I guess, if she's devoted most of her time to carrying this calf. And they aren't, in general, dolphins and killer whales in general, aren't adapted to fasting. But I guess what is interesting about bottlenose dolphins, at least because there's been a study, is that they found that the blubber of pregnant females actually increases the percentage of lipid in the blubber, which is an energy store that animals use when they're food deprived. So it's possible, if she was a good conditioned female when she gave birth, that she might have actually had more lipid stores in her blubber when she gave birth than, let's say, a non-pregnant female. The energetic costs, on the other hand, for carrying a baby is actually not that high. Energetic costs for lactation are higher, but if she isn't really nursing her calf, then she's probably not dealing with that issue. You know, milk production probably happened early on, but if there's not a calf actively suckling, then she probably isn't really expending more energy than would be anticipated for a normal lactating female.
Mm-hmm.
And so she might have more energy stores on board if she was able to get food and she is in good condition prior to giving birth. But yeah, as far as like a fasting ability for a female adult her size, you know, she could probably go about 4 weeks before getting into a real bad state, going to stage 3 fasting, which is difficult to come out of. So I'm hopeful that, you know, this doesn't extend beyond 2 weeks. And, you know, hopefully there would be a food resource available to her. If it's difficult to find food or there's not a lot available, she may not be able to recoup some of what she may have lost. It would be interesting to get some footage of her now to see kind of what her condition looks like, but I'm not sure if that is a possibility.
So you mentioned stage 3 of fasting. So I'm not aware, are there different stages of fasting? And at what stage would the drone be able to differentiate that?
Yeah, that is a good question. How would the drone be able to differentiate that? Yeah, I kind of threw some physiology speak on you. Sorry.
That's okay.
So yeah, in a typical fasting, there's different stages. Stage 1 is early on when the body just uses glucose stores and will have a kind of use a lot of different stores at first, but then it realizes it's going to fast a little bit longer, so then it will convert mostly to using its lipid stores, which is high energy. And that's why I was hopeful if she had the typical blubber that like a female dolphin would show during pregnancy, she would actually increase her lipid stores in her blubber. She would have a bigger energy source to pull from. But as you're fasting, you can't really conserve all your other body energy compartments. So lean tissue is another thing that gets burned, and because it's the protein. The protein doesn't really contribute many calories. It's less calorie-rich than fat,
mm-hmm.
and it's also detrimental because when stage 3 fasting hits, these animals have been fasting for a long time. They have used mostly lipid, but they're running out of lipid stores, and they're also burning a little bit of protein as they go because it's not 100% efficient. And what they're dipping into for these protein stores is skeletal muscle and also including heart muscle. So when an animal goes into stage 3 fasting, or a human, for instance, it's very difficult to come back. And for humans, example, it will take hospitalization, and there could be long-term damage. So I've just done some back-of-the-envelope calculations, and I actually need to do a little bit more. There might be some lipid stores in muscle as well. We need to look at that for killer whales. They're definitely in sperm whales. So just a back-of-the-envelope calculation, just assuming, you know, that there isn't lipid in the muscle, which is probably not true. She could probably go at least 4 weeks without, you know, going into stage 3 if she fasted for, you know, 4 to 6 weeks or something. We would probably be really, really worried. But I'm hopeful that this will be something that doesn't continue.
Yeah, absolutely. And that brings me to my next question is about J50, also known as Scarlett, who was seen earlier this summer looking thin and now is looking even more thin,
mm-hmm.
and Noah has decided to intervene. Would you say that she is in stage 3?
Yeah, it's hard to tell. There's just been not a lot of studies, you know. The only things that have happened, obviously, the early captive animals, some of them starved. But no one was really looking at, they took some good data. In fact, I was like trying to dig out these papers that are hard to come by. They took good data, but they didn't necessarily take the data that would actually definitively tell you when these animals hit stage 3. You can tell by blood samples. You can see how changes of fatty acids or byproducts of protein breakdown occur in the blood. You can see that. So from an aerial photograph, you can't really say it's hit stage 3 fasting. I mean, definitely from above, it looks pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, I am concerned that it, you know, that if it doesn't get better in, you know, a couple weeks, we could have a problem for sure, because it does look pretty thin, bad condition. And I would say that it is, it could be close, if not there. I mean, I just can't tell you definitively because you actually need more than just a picture to determine that.
Right. So you can't necessarily say at these body measurements, you're in different stages. It doesn't equate like that.
No. And I mean, one of the things I've been looking at with in collaboration with all the vets that have done these necropsies is looking at these necropsy animals, looking at the blubber thicknesses that have been measured, looking at some girths and some lengths to try to see, you know, there are some causes of death. How can we possibly determine, you know, just by some morphometric measurements, what's going on with these animals? You know, are they starved? Are they sick? What is, you know, because you have some that are hit, so you know some that are actually healthy, the ones that have been hit by a ship or, you know, blunt force trauma death. And so, unfortunately, when I was doing these analyses, this is something that's going into a paper with several authors. I'm not the lead or anything, but this is just my contribution. The body condition indices that we measured in these necropsy whales, which is blubber thickness and some length and girth to do length-girth ratios, basically it only separates the animals that have died from trauma from the ones that have died from either disease or nutrition issues. It could be a sample size issue. It could be that we're missing something and not taking the right measurements. But for right now, from the data we have from necropsy animals, it's hard from a picture, potentially, and definitely from the measurements that have been taken on the necropsy animals to definitively determine a difference in morphometrics from a diseased animal and a starved animal.
Okay. And that's it. Kind of exactly what's happening with J50, from my understanding, is that Noah and the other researchers aren't sure if she's starving or if she's sick or both.
That's right. And obviously, once an animal starts getting sick, sometimes they lose their appetite and they stop eating. And so you have both happening. And I think that's why we can't really we're having a hard time at these necropsy data really teasing that apart. And there is a potential issue with her health. And what is the chicken or the egg, right? If her mom is in decent condition, you know, and her sibling is in decent condition, what's going on with her? It almost points to potentially a health issue if everybody else that she's traveling with is looking okay, which, you know, again, I don't know. I didn't take any footage. I haven't seen the pictures of the other animals.
Right. Well, and what is your role now in the effort to intervene with J50?
I have provided some information on, you know, at one point there was discussion of, you know, providing food for this whale. So I've done energetics calculations before, and I've published on how much energy and prey these animals need. So I've provided specific ranges of energy that might need to be fed to this whale if that happens, which is, you know, things that were thrown out there. None of this is for sure happening. It's all kind of as things go. So I provided some estimates on how many kilocalories this animal would need a day based on the length estimates that were given to us from the photogrammetry work. And then I have provided the information on how blubber thickness changes with body length from the necropsy whales, because if meds have to be given through a needle, for example, it's good to know, you know, how far into the blubber you need to go and what the blubber thickness for an animal of. We have a somewhat healthy animal in that range and an emaciated animal as well in that length range, so I could give some values. And obviously this animal that is J50 is thin. So those are the contributions I've done, and that's it. But otherwise I'm in the office in Seattle.
Right. An important place to be. One of our volunteers actually asked the question, are her caloric needs different because she's underweight?
That's a good question. That's a very good question. So in order to pack on more weight, you need more energy than, let's say, an animal of that body length. However, when an animal's not eating very much, their metabolic rate drops into metabolic depression. That happens. It's a way that your body tries to conserve the energy it has on board by burning it at a slower rate. But then if it's burning through blubber and it's in cold water, that may increase its metabolic rate because it's blubber thin. So, you know, I'm not sure which way that animal's metabolic rate is going given those two different pools. But, you know, there are people that are involved in this work. Like, if that happens, which, you know, I haven't heard that they're going to try to, I know that they're gearing up and they have all potential avenues available. If they happen to try to give that animal fish, they'll have to monitor it, because after a while, like, you know, people who have dieted or decided to fast, you know, it's very difficult to eat a lot when you come back from that, and you have to kind of gradually increase anyway. So, yes, to gain weight, you need more than you need. What exactly the metabolic rate of that whale is doing right now is, you know, there's potential to go either up because of thermoregulatory issues, because of a reduced blubber layer, or there's an ability for her metabolic rate to go down because she hasn't potentially been eating. Well, she may or may not have been eating. You know, we see that she's in bad shape. Again, not sure if it's because she's super sick and not eating, or just not eating, or what's going on. But, you know, it's possible, given her state, that her metabolic rate may have gone down due to metabolic depression.
And one of our other volunteers brought up something to my attention I'd never even heard of, called refeeding syndrome. And I guess you can probably explain it better, but it sounded to me like it was when someone is in that starving state and then they begin to take on fluids and food, and their body kind of reacts to it in a negative way and can make their condition worse. Is this a part of the plan at all? Do whales react in the same way like people do?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I know there's issues, and you know, there's vets that are involved in this work, and that's great, because these people have worked with stranded animals. And, you know, I think a dolphin is a good model, or another small whale. So I think the people that are involved in this effort would know what to do. It is possible as well, as I mentioned before, that an animal won't come back after a certain point. Like, there's a paper that I was able to read about Moby Doll, for instance, a whale that was taken during the early captures, and it didn't eat for a long time, actually, or they weren't sure. It might not have eaten much for 54 days in captivity, which is, you know, longer than the month or so that I said would be a problem. And it was a younger whale, you know, based on its length, probably about, you know, 5 to 9 years old or something. It's hard to get all the information from those older papers. And it ate again at 54 days in captivity, but then died 1 month later.
Mm-hmm.
So it probably was in a state of no return. And there is a lot, your body is really physiologically messed up if you go too long without food. And so I haven't really investigated like the physiology of what happens, but I do know that, you know, just because you refeed something, an animal, doesn't mean that it's going to be okay if it's at a certain point.
Okay. So potentially, if this operation works, she could be on what looks like a path of recovery, but there could be some underlying damage that will be irreversible.
Yeah, depending on how far it's gone.
Yeah.
And again, that's really difficult to tell from a picture. We can't take blood from these whales. So.
Right.
But, you know, they are trying to sample what they can, you know, blow and fecal material. And, you know, I think it's mostly for diagnosing what kind of health issue might be going on, but also it's possible to look at some metabolic stuff. But again, I'm not responsible for any of those samples or who's going to analyze them. So I don't really know, again, what will come of that.
One question that has been coming up is that, you know, they've been using a long pole to try to capture the breath samples. And I understand that with other animals in other areas, that they're able to use a drone, which may be less stressful. Is that an option? And what sort of pathogens are they looking for in that sample?
Well, I don't have all the information. You know, actually, there was a breast sample taken, and Linda Rhodes here at the center looked at the pathogens, and I honestly didn't expect that question, so I didn't review it.
Oh, okay, sorry.
But I think now the focus is also on trying to collect breath to try to diagnose some things. So, yeah, I'm not really involved with that, so I don't want to speak outside my expertise or realm of info on this.
Okay. Well, here's another unique one. A volunteer from Whale Scout also brought up short-finned pilot whales, in that they are able to lactate for many years beyond having a calf. Mm-hmm. Is that something that is seen in killer whales? And I've always been curious if, you know, back in like the baby boom days, if whales would ever nurse each other's calves within the pod.
Yeah, I would not be surprised if that is not true for killer whales, because it has been observed in bottlenose dolphins. It has been observed in sperm whales. I can't cite anything specific that I've read about killer whales, but again, you know, there's only so much literature that I can read. But absolutely, it seems to be a cetacean thing. with these tooth whales in particular. I'm not sure about necrocetes.
Both the long-term lactation or the sort of like wet nurse scenario, or both?
Long-term lactation, wet nurse scenario for sure for dolphins. The sperm whale, I don't know if they could actually knew who the mom was, but they've just, you know, there have been necropsies of animals that should not be nursing at the age of like 9 or whatever that had some milk and fish in their system. So, I think it's more apt to happen in a very social group. So dolphins, in a lot of ways, are similar to killer whales because the moms often travel with their offspring for extended periods of time. They do form social groups. It's more fission-fusion. It's not quite as, long-term as a killer whale. But I think when you have an animal that physiologically could lactate for a long time and also has strong social bonds, then that would, you know, promote that type of behavior.
So is it possible that J50, being almost 4, could be sort of in a weaning process and struggling through that and may have caught a bug, and that the whole weaning process was challenging? Has that ever been a thought in any of the other young whales that have died?
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's so hard to not get these bodies, right? I mean, a lot of these necropsied animals, I was actually surprised to see, and these aren't southern residents, most of them are not, some of them are, but it is to see all the different things that can kill off a young animal from, you know, just genetic issue and their body not functioning right, to separation and starvation, to just, structural problems, how they were formed. And so, I really can't speculate because, I mean, getting these bodies back is valuable. And obviously, reduction in food is a potential issue for not having young survive. That's absolutely a potential reason. It's obviously suspicious that a lot of these whales have not died, so you wonder about this. But also in a social group of animals, you can have diseases, and young animals also are not equipped as well as older animals to fight diseases. Anyone with a young kid who has a kid in daycare is basically never at work for the first couple years, and that is because their immune system is just, you know, being inundated and overrun, and they have to develop the immunity, and they're just sick all the time.
Yes. I'm familiar. I had a really rough winter.
Yes, I have done that times 3. So I absolutely, you know, all these things, especially when you're a parent, you're kind of like, oh, look at all these complex issues with these young kids.
Yeah. Well, is there anything else that you think our listeners should know about J50 and southern residents in general?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, I'm hopeful for a good outcome in this. I think I just want to give, it sounds so bad, but I can't think of another word, like a shout out to all the people that have really jumped into this and are collaborating on this effort. Again, I'm very remotely involved, but you know, there's a website on the region that's updating on this problem, this issue, and it lists all the partners that are involved, and it's incredible. You know, people from here, a vet from SeaWorld, just a lot of people from many different groups with very diverse backgrounds. And I understand, you know, that the Whale Watch fleet has also been very respectful when they're around. I mean, so I just think, you know, it's really, it's nice to see that, you know, people actually working together for a common good, and maybe with more heads together, and we can just, you know, see what happens. This is new and never been done. So this is going to be, there's like really no prediction. It's kind of like, get information and reassess. That's basically what's happening every day.
Right. Yeah. It's been amazing to see also just the outpouring of interest and action from the public. Everyone is really rallying around both these two young whales. So, mm-hmm. My best wishes to everyone that's on the team. And I'm pulling, and I know everyone else out there is really pulling for J50 and for the southern residents in general. I want to thank you so much for chatting with me today, and good luck with everything else that you've got going on.
Thanks.
Thank you very much for listening today. If you like this podcast, be sure to go up to whalescout.org to check out other episodes. You can also subscribe on iTunes for free, and podcasts will be sent directly to your phone. If you have comments or questions, please feel free to leave them on our Facebook page, facebook.com/whalescout, and we will talk to you again very soon. Namaste.
Thank you for listening to the Whale Scout podcast. Your voluntary donation goes toward the recovery of whale species and enhanced whale watching opportunities in the Pacific Northwest. Please visit www.whalescout.org for more information.